Okay, my friends, this hour we will take your phone calls with Nick Begich, Controlling the Human Mind and HARP. You're all next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast with our dear friend Nick Begich here. We'll go to your calls in just a second. Nick, as you look at the things that you have done in your career, what for you has been the most satisfying?
Well, I've enjoyed the public presentations, actually, on just all the different topics, because when I'm in person and I get to meet people personally, that's always been, I think, one of the high points of what I've been doing the last 20 years. And, you know, public education in the sciences is the way I've always looked at it, you know, from the standpoint of not just HARP, but all the subjects we've covered over the years. And, you know, I think that's just being able to dig that material out, present it to the public in a way that gives people direct access to good information. And, you know, the hallmark's been the sources. And, I've worked with some great people over the years in terms of co-authors and people working with me on the research side. And, I think that's been really the hallmark of the work and the thing I've enjoyed the most about it.
I think so, too. So let me ask you about 2016, and as much as you come from a political family, how's your brother doing, by the way?
He's looking pretty good. You know, he's in an uncontested primary. There's three on the Republican side running for the seat, and so the primary's coming up in August. That'll get decided, and then he'll know he's running against. But, you know, we're a small state, and I'll bet you in that Senate race at least $20 million get spent on the campaign between.
That's huge.
It's just insane. You know, the whole population of Alaska is only around 750,000, right? And so there's been, and only about 150,000, 200,000 at the most are going to vote. I mean, so, you know, what is that? You know, that's just insane spending. And it's mostly, you know, special interest groups that have basically unlimited spending, which I think is fundamentally wrong. And particularly in these state elections where, you know, state people who live here ought to be deciding what's going on. And so I think that's really all around the country, though. We're seeing more of it. And the idea that such a strong voice can be yielded by so few on either side of an issue, to me, has just really gone crazy. It's really messed up what used to be a lot more fun. You know, politics, my mom says it all the time. She goes, it used to be a lot more fun, you know, because you would disagree with your opponents on bills and issues, but at the end of the day, you could still, you know, break bread with each other, just recognize you had a different, you know, route to the finish line, but what everybody wanted was, you know, something better, you know, and some of that's gotten lost in the shuffle, you know. So my brother's got a race that's going to be interesting. It's, you know, and it's going to be tight in Alaska because that's where Alaska is, but I think Mark will do well in rural Alaska as he did before, and you know he's done good things for Alaskans. He'll do good in the urban areas. I think he'll win again. And
yeah, decent guy, honest guy. He's all over this Veterans Administration disaster.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's a big issue for us in Alaska. You know, we have a lot of veterans live here, and you know, Mark's on Veterans Affairs. He takes it pretty seriously, and you know, and he's more of a middle of the road as Democrats go. You know, in Alaska, there's a lot of issues Republicans are right on. Mark recognizes that as a Democrat and votes accordingly, and you know, so that's a little different. He's not a straight party kind of guy, and you know, Alaskan politics is always lively. We got a lot of different issues here. You know, big developmental issues. Indigenous issues, just because of the nature of, you know, half the tribes in the United States are in Alaska. Most people don't realize we have 226 tribal governments. I think one more possibly coming online. You know, that's a lot of different ways of being, you know, in terms of culture and so forth. We have a lot of struggles still in that area up here to be resolved at the federal level. And so, you know, hopefully Mark gets one more chance in the Senate, can finish up some things that need to be done there, and that would be great. It would be good to see him there.
Sure would. I wanted to ask you, because of the 1972 plane crash with your father, Congressman Nick Begich, of course,
right,
your reaction to this missing Malaysian plane, because they have still never found the small plane your father was in, right?
Right, that's right. You know, every time a plane goes down, I always, you know, you can't
think about that.
Yeah, exactly, because I know exactly how people are feeling, and I've, you know, lived with that for a very long time. 1972 was a long time ago. I was a young kid, you know, 14, just 13, almost 14 at the time that the plane actually disappeared. And, you know, that's, there were six kids in my family. The youngest was four, so that was a big impact. My mom was 36, raising six kids.
42 years ago, Nick.
Yeah, that's a while ago.
How could they not find the plane as of now?
And this is a question, you know, because there were reports that they'd actually located the plane. That surfaced actually in 1993, over 20 years later, in a article in Roll Call, which was a Washington publication. They were from Freedom of Information Act requests that had been released by the FBI, where apparently someone had come into Southern California and reported that they had located the plane using some kind of surveillance technology. And the next report on these guys was a few days later, where the FBI was affirming that they appeared to be credible and their source was credible. And they reported two people alive at the crash site, a known location, but as far as the official record goes, nothing was ever recovered. So, that certainly sent a lot of questions, you know, for my family. And actually, that ended my mom's participation in Alaska politics. She left Alaska at that point in time.
She had enough. That was it.
That was it, you know. And it was like, you know, if it can happen to a congressman, and Hale Boggs, who was with my dad, was a majority leader of the House, it could happen to anyone. But you got to think about the times. You know, this is just before the second election of Richard Nixon and that whole Watergate. And, you know, if you remember, Agnew went to jail.
Tax evasion.
Yeah. Right. And then you had Ford step in. Then Nixon, you know, went out and Ford pardoned Nixon. Ford steps up. Rockefeller comes in. And then someone tried to shoot Ford, which would have made Rockefeller president. I mean, that's that whole mess. But if Watergate had happened just a little bit differently, if both Agnew and Nixon had lost their position at the same time, the Democrats would have had the executive branch, because that's the way the succession and the presidency would have gone. And I think if Boggs had been around, it would have been a little different outcome, and then the whole thing would have changed. But
do you think that plane was taken down?
I whether it was taken down or left to be stayed gone at that particular time in history, I think it was one of the two. I don't think it was just an accident. No.
They were on their way to a fundraiser in Juneau, right?
Right, and Boggs was actually, it's interesting too, as Boggs was working just before that on a campaign in Texas, and the guy who took him from where he was to the airport to catch his connection to D.C. and then up to meet my dad in Alaska was Bill Clinton, when he was a young Democrat.
Really?
As a volunteer in a campaign in Texas.
Small world.
And he later appointed Lindy Boggs, Hale Boggs' widow, U.S. ambassador to the Vatican, where she served out her time after serving 18 years in the U.S. House in her husband's seat. So, I mean, it's a small, very strange world. I mean, the coincidence is Carnahan, when his...
Carnahan from Missouri. Yep.
Right. When his plane went down, it was the anniversary of my dad's plane disappearance, October 16th.
There are some who think that was taken down.
Right. And then the next one, that was the guy in Minnesota. I'm trying to remember his name, the congressman that went down in northern Minnesota in a small plane. But I can't recall, but it was the town that he crashed in was where my dad was born, and my uncle had been a local legislator and the mayor there for years. So, you know, it's just like, what a
Paul Wellstone, wasn't he?
Yeah, Wellstone, that's it. Exactly right. That's who it was. And, you know, so the world is a really strange place in terms of how things go. I think one of these days, you know, when you find these things out, you know, you go, well, what was going on in people's heads then? And you think about what we now know of Hoover and what he was up to. And, you know, we never got the full story in Watergate, because just the way in which everybody shut it down and pardoned everyone and, you know, kind of went, well, let's forget about all this, move on.
Exactly.
But, you know, sometimes I think truth is more important than the pardon. And so the truth should come first and then the pardon, because I think that's what gets lost in so many of these things, when government hides what should be apparent to the public. And that's what we've lost, I think, fundamentally in government. When we think about these technologies and the way they're developed today, throughout the bureaucracy, even a lot of it out of sight of even political leadership, because it gets buried so deep in bureaucracy, they just got to outlast a politician. You know, these bureaucracies last forever, and they function that way. And that's where the oversight is missing in a more opaque world that shouldn't be. Well,
we've got an entire bank of calls here for you, Nick, so let's go to them now. We'll go to Fairbanks, Alaska. Chris is with us on the wild card line. Chris, go ahead.
Chris Fallon, I'm a research assistant professor up at the University of Alaska, Fairbanks, and I've participated in a number of HARP campaigns doing experimental research with the upper atmosphere, and recently learned how to operate the facility and run the whole thing back when the university was planning to take possession of it. And just, you know, right off, I think that the mind control applications are BS. However, since the facility is operating right this minute, in fact, it's transmitting at 3.33 megahertz. And, you know, if you're interested to tune in, and I have the capability to drive down and, you know, put in some experiment requests and call in some favors for experiment time. You know, at 700 gallons of diesel per hour, doesn't come cheap.
It's going to close, Chris. What do you think of that?
Well, I'm disappointed, you know, because it's a big part of my research. But, you know, there'll be a lot of things to do. So that would be a disappointment. I hope it doesn't close, but, you know, it is what it is, and it's ultimately not my money, or at least just a...
I bet it is. It's probably taxpayer money.
It is taxpayer money. Yeah. I have no idea what that works out to.
It's my money. It's my money. It's your money. It's Nick Begich's money. It's everybody's money. Kathy in Las Vegas, take it away. Hi, Kathy.
I have a question regarding mind control. Earlier, you made a comment about neurobiofeedback feedback being used for children with ADD.
Mm-hmm.
I also wondered regarding... PTSD and OCD, how does the mind actually achieve the state on its own after receiving treatment?
I was having trouble hearing
that. Yeah, me too. Can you repeat that one more time, Kathy?
Oh, sure. You made a comment regarding children that had ADD
right.
being treated with neurobiofeedback.
Right.
And you said that after a certain amount of treatment, the mind... achieves the state on its own. I was wondering, how does that work regarding PTSD and OCD being treated with neurobiofeedback?
I don't know the answer to that, but if you would take a search on web, you'll find plenty of information, and I'm sure there's studies that if they've been done, you'd be able to find them quite easily. But I would just do a search on the web because I don't know the specific answer to that.
Yeah, and I'm not even sure there is a tie-in with that, Nick.
Yeah, there may not be. And you know, neurobiofeedback will, you know, set an emotional state pretty readily, you know, in terms of being ready for learning, you know, because hyperactivity is something where the brain is just kind of either all over the map or you have a higher pulse rate that does not lend itself to focused learning. So being able to learn how to do just something simple, modulating the gross brain activity is fairly easy. And there's psychologists all over the country that offer, you know, that kind of technology, because there's a lot of different ways to, you know, there's a lot of hardware out there these days, and most psychologists are at least aware of it, and there's someone in your community doing it.
Mike is with us in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Michael, go ahead.
Hi, George. Hey, great show. You know, I've been a fan of yours for about 10 years now.
Thank you.
And I think you're great, George.
Thanks.
But anyway, now what this gets to is experimentation on people. And have you ever had Dr. Judy Wood? I think you did have
yes.
Dr. Judy Wood.
Yes, we've had
show.
Dr. Judy Woods on, talked about how she believes those buildings went down during 9/11.
Right. And I mean, how, after you listen to somebody, you know, like Dr. Judy Wood, can there be a regression where we're going to go back to the you know, the terrorizing terrorists and the Terratopia? I mean, it's just an idiocracy, that movie Idiocracy that I love so much, that has become a reality where our government is doing experiments on us, horrible experiments. And these death towers, that could be, they could turn the whole United States into the HARP. They don't need a facility. Anywhere where there's a death tower is a directed energy weapon or a mind-control device.
I think they took Tesla technology, Mike and Nick, and they modified it, They enhanced it. And, Nick, like you say, if they're talking about they've got something else to move onward with another experiment or two, they probably have incredible weaponry, huh?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, whatever's been gained, at least from the Air Force perspective, they've learned what they wanted to learn there, and they're ready to move on. Okay, move on. You know, and I understand that the caller from Fairbanks who's actually working on the instrument. That's why I don't believe it's going to close, because I don't think it takes that much to keep it operating. And I'm sure I would be surprised if it's not funded at the end of the day.
A lot of private companies would do it.
Yeah, I think there's probably, you know, even if it shuts down for a while, someone's going to pick this up. It's too much invested to just let go. I can't imagine it happening. If the bulldozers actually roll over it, though, I'll be the first to be glad to announce that one if it really happens. But I don't know that it will.
You'll see it happen.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, next up, let's see if we got some time. Sure we do. Let's go to David in Anchorage, Alaska, west of the Rockies. Hey, David, you're on with Nick Begich.
Hi, Dr. Begich. I actually was able to have a conversation with you in line at the courthouse for when you were unluckily stuck behind me for about 25 minutes. I turned around and asked you, asked if you wanted to talk about alternative science rather than just twiddle your thumbs for the next 25 minutes. And I think we had a good talk. I really enjoyed it anyway.
Well, thanks for that. You know, it's I think there's a lot going on in that makes science really the most interesting stuff happening. I mean, whether it's weapon systems, you know, they're like the bummer of it. You know, you get into all of these, whether you should or whether you shouldn't. The things that interest me are what you have to enhance human performance, and that's what I think gets lost. Also, you know, when you think about being able to take a kid with an attention deficit disorder, or just a normal functioning person, and heighten your ability in terms of memory, in terms of just being able to utilize the mind. Think of it as the underutilized muscle. If we just learn how to use it more effectively, you know, how to remain calm in the middle of the storm, just think how much more can be accomplished, and we can do that. I mean, I think that's really the more exciting direction, and really where a lot of my interest started in all this was, what can we do to enhance our human performance that we can be in control of that might actually, you know, open up new gateways for better solutions for more complex problems? I think that's really the more interesting part of the science. And I think that's, again, what I was saying earlier, you know, that's where maybe this next evolution of humankind is headed, where we actually open up, unlock those portions of the mind that maybe a few have experienced, but maybe all of us are destined to. I mean, to me, that would be the ultimate you know, technology, and maybe we create enough of it to convince ourselves, oh yeah, we can do that, and we finally remember how.
Are your books in video still available, Nick?
Yeah, all of them are, as a matter of fact, and the website's always good to check out for that at earthpulse.com, and I know we're linked up with Coast to Coast tonight. And you know, the if you read the material and you read it today, we wouldn't change a thing, because I think the facts have proven themselves out. What's out there now, and technology advanced dramatically in the last couple of decades. I mean, what you can do today, and here's what I look at it as, the analogy I use, it's like resolution. You know, the resolution is becoming finer and finer and finer as we gain greater computing power and a better knowledge of biophysics.
We're going to come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Final phone calls with Nick Begich. Don't go away. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. On our next program, Jonathan Zapp joins me as we talk about his work in the paranormal world. Make sure you're part of that. And also make sure you're part of downloading the free iHeartRadio app. Simply grab it. Go to the store. The iHeartRadio app is available. You can also listen at iHeartRadio.com and stay connected to your favorite station. Welcome back. Nick Begich with us. We'll take your calls. Nick, in terms of Tesla technology, do you think government has done this? We've captured it?
I think a lot of it, yeah, I think probably. Because if you really look at all of Tesla's work, it was really more about oscillating electromagnetic fields applied in different ways. And so he had his ideas on radio, on power generation, you know, but when you look at all of it, it's all about alternating currents or alternating magnetic fields. And I think that's something they figured out and was able to apply in a lot of areas of science. And you know, when you think about, you know, Tesla did a little bit of work with dithermy, which were, you know, these electromagnetic healing tools that he was messing around with in the 20s, and maybe even a little before then. But, you know, the idea of being able to affect the body with electromagnetic fields, you know, is now the area of biophysics, which, you know, is this whole idea of, you know, what, how does it really operate and what can you do to manipulate its operation? And it's looking at the physics of it, sort of the energy underlying the chemical reactions and all the things the body does that are observed sort of after the fact. And so when you think about Tesla, as it relates to physical health, there's those aspects. There's the idea of radio, you know, when he was messing around in Central Park with radio transmitters before Marconi, and there was a big fight over that one, you know. But there were a lot of things Tesla was doing, and all of it was about just kind of manipulating energy in all different ways and realizing that by doing so you could create all kinds of real interesting effects.
Okay, let's go to the phones now. Perry in Santa Barbara, California. Perry, condolences, of course, to what happened out in that area. How's the community doing?
The community is still healing. You know, the vigils are still going on out here, and it's just left this entire county, from Santa Maria all the way down to Santa Barbara, really, really in shock. Yeah. And it just, I don't know. I was talking to my mom and dad. My mom's actually in a rehab, physical rehab center, and hopefully she'll be getting out soon. We'll have to wait for Obamacare on that. But dad and I and her, we were talking about that. And, you know, we were saying, when did this all start? You know, and it, I mean, in the modern age, and we talked about that Texas bell tower sniper. He actually had a sniper rifle, and you know, in doing that. But the one thing I do so much feel for the father of one of the victims there, but I do disagree with him when he just almost like a knee jerk reaction attacks the NRA. I think he should have really said, also, we need better mental health tracking in this country, and we need to, you know, and my God, his poor parents. I mean, he texts them or something that I'm losing my mind. They're driving up the 101 as fast as they can to get to Santa Barbara. They turn on the radio and they hear that's their son.
Yeah,
and
They knew too.
Right? I tell you, it's, you know, and he started out, you know, this whole tragedy by stabbing to death his three roommates. And, the man, you know, Elliot Roger, he was really blessed in life. I mean, my God, his father was the director of the first Hunger Games.
Hunger Games, that's right.
Yeah. And so it doesn't make any sense. I mean, you know, there are people who are living in poverty that would never do this. And, you know, and he was driving a black BMW when he drove.
Yep. It makes no sense.
And this random acts of car, you know, or drive-bys. And one more thing I'm going to let you guys go, but you, George, you're always a gentleman, and I've been reading Mr. Begich or Dr. Begich about your father, you and your son, and you are all gentlemen and gentlemen, and I thank you guys, and you have a great night.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Tough situation out there in Santa Barbara, and I think the more you investigate stuff like this too, Nick, talking about controlling the human mind, you will find that mood-altering drugs, prescription right. drugs, are in these things all the time.
Yeah, that's true. And there, you know, also, you'll see video gaming. And what people don't realize about a lot of video gaming today, the way it's designed is by looking at the brain in real time to see how a game stimulates specific regions of the brain. And the ones you want to stimulate are the ones associated with addictive behaviors and pleasure centers, because that's what's going to bring you back to that game and make it sell a lot of copies. And so things are actually designed in the gaming world that way. And that, you know, kind of overplays the adrenals, does a lot of things to kind of desensitize people to certain events and situations, because it's actually playing on real stimulation of the brain for real specific outcomes. And that, I think, is something that, you know, ought to be considered in a lot of this. You know, it's sort of desensitizing and, you know, burning kids out, you know, and it's whether it's the drugs or whether it's another way to manipulate their biology, that ought to be looked at, you know, because that's really what it is.
Let's go to Kevin in Bloomington, Indiana. Kevin, thank you for calling. Go ahead, sir.
Hello there, George and Nick. May God's love be with you and the Coast to Coast listeners always.
Thank you. Very kind.
Nick, you're a fantastic guest, and it's a privilege to be able to talk to you about consciousness. I've been a student of consciousness for about 40 years now, and I'm particularly interested in sound, certain bass frequencies, and changing mental states that way. I've experienced times when I've been with 20,000-30,000 people and the right bass note is hit and things happen. And I'm a believer in the communal consciousness. And right now, you got to excuse me, I don't have long on this plane, but I'm reading a book called Who Dies by Stephen Levine. And there's an opener by Ram Dass, and it's all about thinking with your heart rather than your mind. And I'd be interested in what your views of that might be. And then I just got two many thousand-year-old quotes that I'd like to say. It'll just take a couple seconds. The first one is, may all living, breathing, sentient beings find happiness. May bodhicitta consciousness arise, 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 and never fall. And also, in the land, as we throw our souls back to the Creator, let our chant fill the void, so that others might hear. In the land of the dark, the ship of the sun is drawn by the grateful dead. And that's from the Great Pyramid. And God bless you all for letting me speak. I greatly appreciate it. You make it easier to get through very long, hard, painful nights.
Right,
God bless you both.
There's a question in there somewhere for you.
Yeah, it was on the brain and the heart center, I think, is what he was speaking about. And you know, it's funny because a lot of the ancient traditions, you know, kind of carry some message in both in terms of where the seat of emotion might be, you know. And there's a... this again gets down to that whole that energy question. What are we really? And you know, I think we're basically energy at our root. And there's a lot of traditions talk about energy that you can actually measure within the body, and the heart center certainly a big part of that in terms of what is there. I think they're connected. I don't have any doubt about it. And I think energetically, that's what the planet is all about. You know, we are connected to some fundamental energetic level. There are no real closed systems, which is why we need to be conscious, not just of one another, but what we're doing on this planet as we kind of roll through it. And energy systems are what we're creating today, and they do have interactions, many of these systems, with us.
Okay, east we go. Chris is with us, Tampa, Florida. Chris, take it away. Thank you for calling.
Yes, hi. I was wondering if you ever directly connected chemtrails with HAARP.
No. I never did. I just don't see the connection as necessary. Some people have, but I've just not made that correlation.
I was wondering if the metals and other particles sprayed by the chemtrails could be used by HAARP to conduct electricity to heat up the atmosphere.
You could utilize, you know, you can stimulate metal. You know, you can do some things if there's particulate material there that you want to resonate with, whatever it is, whether it's some natural or man-made constituents. So you can do all kinds of things with that radio frequency energy.
Because if you notice, before, with all the bizarre weather we've been having recently, before you get all the big storms, there's been reports of chemtrails being sprayed all in the skies.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, I know it adds significantly. You know, what I do know, it can have an impact on storm fronts in terms of how that lays down. And I'm sure there's lots more people qualified to answer that questions about chemtrails, because I just have not followed.
And Nick, what's going on with Sarah Palin up there?
I don't think anything. You know, they keep throwing a rumor that maybe she's going to run for my brother's seat, but so far she hasn't shown up. But I don't know that she could win an election in Alaska these days, to tell you the truth.
Not well-liked?
Well, people were pretty disappointed that she kind of quit in the middle of the game. She was doing some things here related to the oil industry that probably needed to be completed because her successor certainly didn't do it.
And off she went. Huh?
Yeah, and she, you know, kind of left that half done, which is too bad because I think that cost Alaska a lot, and I think she went into an arena that she wasn't really ready for.
My psychics are predicting at this point Hillary Clinton and Jeb Bush as the two front runners for the Democrat and the Republican parties.
Wow, that would be interesting. You know, if that would be interesting.
A little bit more of the same, though. Nothing too different. Nothing creative.
No, I don't think so. I don't think anything different. I think it's just continuation under a different first name. But the game is the same. You know, really, it's the same.
So if Mark ever runs and wins the presidency, like John Kennedy appointed his brother attorney general, where would Nick Begich end up?
Oh, I don't think they can even do that anymore. They probably changed those rules. You know, I don't think Mark aspires to that. I think he really looks at what he's doing in the Senate and what he's doing in Alaska, because quite frankly, a lot of the issues that are traditionally Republican issues or Democratic and Republican issues here, development, oil, gas, minerals, the things that we're doing up here and how we approach those. And so having a Democrat in the U.S. Senate right now matters. And Alaska, as a national treasure house, you know, we have this incredible place here that's like almost 20% of the U.S. land mass and has enough in oil, gas, and minerals to probably cover the national deficit and the debt several times over.
I know. You and I talked about that. Why can't we get that oil to pay off our national debt and then go into some national profit sharing where every taxpayer gets a check every year?
We could. We do that in Alaska on a small scale with our permanent fund. Norway did that with their resources and have a tremendous permanent fund. And really, these are national assets that are held in trust by the national government. What's happening is multinational companies are ripping us all off. Let me spell it out real quick.
Literally, you're right.
Because we're one of the very few places left on the world where they run the whole show, because 88% of the oil and gas produced in the world is by national governments who contract with these guys, because they get a little competition out there for drilling and service industries, which you want. But the government keeps the money because it stays in their treasury and funds endowments and programs. Alaska has no state income tax. We have a permanent fund that gives money to our citizens each year that's generated from the savings. And our savings are $51 billion now. And that's from just a small share of the Alaskan share of the wealth that's been produced. And it's a fraction of what is here. And that's what's being missed is, you know, infrastructure doesn't exist. You really have a railroad link to the rest of the country. I mean, can you imagine that? We're 20% of the landmass. You can't get here by train, which means you can't move freight in and out by train. You can't move minerals in and out by train. And that's a problem when you think about what should be happening with Alaska. It should be adding value and shipping material to the lower 48 states to add more value and exporting, because we do have a market advantage in energy and in natural resources, and we can do it better here than a lot of other places in the world where we at least do have a framework of regulation that, you know, that allows things to go forward in an orderly way.
Brenda's in Cameron Park, California. Let's get a couple more calls in here. Brenda, go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Hi.
Hi.
Here, I'm glad to talk to both of you. I was wondering, have you heard of Abraham Hicks? Esther Hicks receives Abraham, and she says that we're all vibration and energy, and how the it's like the law of gravity, and then there's the law of attraction and how it works within the human body on a cellular level and with each other.
Nick, I'm not familiar with this. Are you?
I don't know that particular person, but I mean the basic ingredient is energy first, and then atoms, molecules, chemistry, and body parts, body, you know, so it is really energy at a fundamental level. And that's and most of what we think we see as solid is truly in motion. So, yeah. It's mostly energy. It's all about that. And the physics bears that out. It's no longer just something for religion and philosophy. Science bears that out.
Yes. Well, she is Abraham Hicks.com, and she's been over 20 years receiving this intelligence on vibrations and how it works in our body and how it creates our life.
All right, we'll get the producers to track her down and see what's out there. Only got about a minute and a half or so to go, Mr. Begich. So let's look at the future for a moment. Where are we headed with all this kind of technology, Mr. Begich?
Well, I think at present it's towards a, unfortunately, still a more directed and controlled society. And that's the thing I think that we need to see move a different direction. You know, it's the we need a stronger whistleblower mechanism. We need a way to relook at sort of the direction that we're headed, because that is what the outcome. I mean, you think about how people are treated within airports. Imagine that in your whole society. Imagine that when you walk down your city street. You know, I don't want to feel that way. I don't want to feel constrained in my personal liberty out of fear. I would prefer to see it out of something else. And I think the direction we're headed is more of the same, and that leads a dark trail. But at the other end of it, I really do believe, and I'm kind of the pathological optimist, I really think we have a chance to break free of that cycle too. And it's this generation that'll decide whether we're free or whether we're slaves, whether we see liberty in the 21st century in a new way that gives us control of our private information. Maybe it isn't a commercial commodity. Maybe there's some things that aren't for sale, and maybe we got to rethink sort of the direction of personal privacy and redirect our political leadership to rethink it. I mean, this is a changed world. It's only going to become more complex in the 21st century. And I think we have that potential of making the big leap, that evolutionary leap, where we start to realize our anomalous human potentials. And I think that's the forward side of all of it. Do the things you can to enhance your own individual performance and try to do something better in the things that you can influence. I think
lots agreed though out there, Nick. Thanks for being on the program as usual. Is it or could it be the end of HARP? Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Lottasour, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Knapp, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.